quorum, but we may continue because we're not going to take resolutions so early in the meeting. So if you want to continue, we may, Chairperson.
I think we will continue, ma'am. A very warm welcome to all members and guests, as well as the delegation from the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. To start this meeting, I'd like us to have a moment of silence and quiet meditation, please. Thank you very much. I will start by asking the members to introduce themselves for the record. My name is Christopher Fry, and I'm the chairperson of the Ad Hoc Committee on the Energy Crisis. I will ask if we can start with Member van der Westhuizen.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. Andrikus van der Westhuizen, a member of the committee, and I appreciate your warm welcome, especially as I'm joining from Beaufort West.
Good morning, Deirdre Bartman.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. I did put in an apology, but my meeting was cancelled, so I'm present, Ferlin Christians.
Thank you, Member Christians.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Bulela Isaac Selego.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Khalil Brunke.
Thank you, Member Brunke.
Good morning, Chair. Aisha Kassim.
Thank you, Member Kassim. Member de Villiers? Member de Villiers? Okay. We are privileged to have the delegation from the Nelson Mandela Bay University, Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, headed by Professor Janet Chetty. Professor Chetty, can you introduce your staff and your team, please?
Yes, good morning. Good morning, everybody. It's very nice to be here with you all. Professor Janet Chetty from the Department of Development Studies in Nelson Mandela University. And I'd like to introduce my colleagues, Mareka Mokhotlo. Mareka, do you want to greet? And Patrick Brennan.
Morning, everybody.
I don't think Tony Martell is online. Tony, are you online? Let's proceed.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Tony. So Tony Mottel and Mareka, these are masters and doctoral students in the Department of Development Studies working on the Transition Township Research Program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Chetty. I do have two apologies I've received, one from Member Marie, who was an oversight visit, and one from Member America. Is there any other apologies, Ms. Kuti?
Chairperson, no other apologies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then without further ado, I think we will go into the presentation. Professor Chetty, can you share your presentation and walk us through the presentation, please? Thank you.
Yes, I'll do so. I'll ask Mareka if you will share the presentation from your side.
It's loading, it will show shortly, Prof.
There we go. Great, thank you, Mareka. So if I can, I've just introduced the team to you, and if I can explain a little bit about the background to this project. We started this some years ago as a research project with the concept of a transition township. And really what we were looking at is how the just energy transition can involve quite a fundamental economic transformation. And essentially what this involves is in a township context, using existing infrastructure and space to allow for social ownership or community ownership of productive assets, including renewable energy, which is the primary focus of our presentation today, but also food production and waste to energy or waste to wealth, which is through recycling of energy, recycling of waste. So, Marika, if you can go forward, the concept of the transition township is looking at moving away from fossil fuel-based economy, obviously in the current context of climate change. And we think that this is an opportunity rather than a threat. It's an opportunity to transition to a new model of economic development. And we're doing this through what we call participatory action research, which is to pilot, so it's to test out this new model in a township context. It's not, I must say, it's not only applicable for a township context, it's just that this is the name of the research project in which we have been implementing it to date. But we think that there is enormous potential for the rollout of PV solar as a form of energy production in the current energy crisis. And in fact, since we started this project some years ago, which you'll see, it's been going for some time, we've actually seen quite dramatic changes in the past year in terms of the uptake of PV solar in South Africa. So part of our project is to pilot how we can produce electricity to feed into the municipal grid. And this is a crucial aspect of what I'm going to talk about today and what my colleagues are going to explain to you. And what we're putting forward in our from our results, our proposal thus far, is that the potential for this for municipalities to benefit from social ownership of renewable energy has not yet been realized. And it's actually potentially a win-win situation because the idea is that the local owners of households and of productive energy assets, PV solar, of course, is a technology which can easily be distributed, you know, in different local communities, that the potential for people to be producers and to earn income from selling electricity to the grid is really important. And in addition, the municipality benefits from getting access to electricity, possibly even at a lower price than from Eskom. And thirdly, of course, we are contributing to solving the challenge of climate change. So this is the underlying thinking. We can see we implemented in 2019 our first pilot project, which is called the Saltuba Cooperative, which is 25 households in KwaZakhele Township with a 5-kilowatt solar PV solar array, which is connected to the municipal grid. So just to give you a little background of KwaZakhele and why we did this here, KwaZakhele is an old township set up in the 1950s, initially as a site and service township. Pretty homogeneous working class township, adjacent to an industrial area, adjacent to an old coal-fired power station, which has been was decommissioned in the 1980s, but in fact is a potential resource for other forms of new industry. And, you know, there is a very high level of unemployment in KwaZakhele as elsewhere in South Africa. But actually, people, there is a workforce there which has some experience in industry because it's an industrial city built around the motor industry, as you'll know. So people are living in formal housing. There is electricity connections. There is infrastructure. So we're saying, how can we use this current situation, and so what we call asset-based community development, or ABCD. So just to say, the way in which we are piloting this is the concept of gap-tap cooperatives, and you'll see through the layout of this township, the each roughly 30 households has an open space, which is municipal land, public open space, it's the zoning. And that public open space was originally where the stand tap was for collecting water before there was reticulated water into each household. So that public space is now used by the households who live there and who own those homes as a productive space. And each member of the household can be a member of the cooperative. So we're looking at different combinations of waste recycling, food production, and solar energy production on each of these gas taps. And let me ask Patrick Brennan to come in on the next slide and explain how we understand this in terms of townships being productive and exchanging with the city. Patrick, do you want to come in?
Yes, good morning. Well, thanks, Prof, and good morning, everybody. So this diagram shows a sort of conceptual abstraction of what we would envisage would be in the township as a whole. On your left-hand side, you'll see that we're going to take some, we're going to get some suppliers. We're going to develop some sort of township mercantile exchange where you're a labor or you're a business that supplies solar PV or you... business services organization, you can offer your services to the cooperatives that are going to be doing the second step, which is in the middle. You see where it says neighborhood production systems. either in energy, food production, waste management, water collection, we will have neighborhoods that would manage relatively small installations, but throughout the township. So I won't go into the numbers with you, but each household would have an allocation of around about 4 or 5 kilowatts. and that's the size of a small carport. So it would easily fit in a RDP house, for example, or it can be in the shared space. So the households themselves to decide. So that would mean that, in Kwazakhele, if you took all of the 120 gap taps that are there and additional space, there's potentially 100 megawatts of renewable energy installation available. In other words, the power available from, if we had 120 gap taps, each with around about 100 kilowatts, would be 100 megawatts. Which is significant. And if you do that in the entire system, we'd be looking at 1.5 gigawatts. And to give you an idea, the shortfall for the country is around about between 25 and 30 gigawatts. So in other words, if every household in Nelson Mandela Bay either had on its roof or owned part of an installation of around about 5 kilowatts, we'd be able to make a significant contribution as a city to the solution of the current energy supply crisis. So if you go to the right there, you'll see City Energy Exchange, and that's where we envisage where the producers will sell the electricity to either to the municipality or to whoever else. But the point is they can produce around about 150 gigawatt hours. And again, I won't go into that. If you want to look at the numbers, we can provide them. But the city as a whole will produce about 2.2 terawatt hours. And then the final sort of column there is who's going to actually consume this. And we have some idea of what the consumption is already. And again, we haven't put the numbers yet, but we can give them to people if you want. And it's going to be households, local commerce and industry, and the city commerce and industry. And this then becomes some kind of total system for the city. Okay, so if you look at the capacity of this at the national, provincial and national level, So the current installed capacity of the country is around about, as I said, 52 gigawatts, which is a, you know, the actual number there, 52,104 megawatts. The latest IRP sees that rising to 77 gigawatts by 2030. And the plan at the moment is that that increase comes from renewable sources. Some of it's going to be, we won't go into detail, but yeah. So, and if all 16 million households in the country participated in something like this, installed capacity would be 64 gigawatts, which is 124% of the current capacity and 83% of the planned capacity. So in other words, and again, we're not saying that every single household would participate, but we're saying that if a significant number of households participate in this kind of thing, we will make a dent in the in that gap between where we are now and what's planned for 2030. And then if you look at, so just go back one more. The actual value of what can be produced is in this table that you see below. You know, number of households, what the installed capacity that would be, the production in kilowatt hours, and then the RAND value of that at current prices. And just if you look at the bottom, so Saltuba Co-op, 25 households, it's 100 kilowatts, so 0.1 megawatts. Its production is going to be 150,000 kilowatt hours per annum. And these are actually current prices. That's in Port Elizabeth, in Tribeca, that's going to be 285,000 rand per annum. Now, if you add 285,000 rand per annum to 25 households, you do that across the township, you're going to be, I think the current average household income is around about 3,000 a month. You're going to add a third to that. Yeah. So this has knock-on effect potential and multiplier effect potential. And once you get a system like this up and running, it can make a very significant contribution to the resolution of all kinds of problems. So I think I'll leave it there.
Great. Thank you, Patrick. So let's look a little bit at the actual Saltuba cooperative. Just to say, this slide was from the local newspaper here, the Herald, and this was the excitement we felt when this PV solar array was established and connected to the grid. And you'll see here this idea that the energy landscape can be transformed by people power, and that it could be a blueprint for countrywide rollout. This is what we were arguing. We established this in 2019, and although we were feeding into the municipal grid, Saltuba was unable to receive payment because the municipal system is simply not, in regulatory terms, able to respond to this. But as you know, at the end of 2021, I think it was, the regulations changed, and independent producers are allowed to produce and sell electricity. There are still some restrictions in terms of how municipalities can buy it. So my understanding, and I'm very interested in discussing this with people from Western Cape provincial legislature, is my understanding is that in Cape Town, there is a scheme where you can feed into the grid, but you can't actually get paid in cash for that. So although it's called cash for power, people are getting a rebate on their municipal bills. If you just go back to the picture there. This picture, the establishment of the PV solar array. And this gives you a good insight into the context, because this is the gas tap. It's an open space, and you can see the old municipal houses around this gas tap. But this could be implemented in pretty much any context, township or suburb. In this model, this particular model, we are relying on there being electricity infrastructure in place already. So we are not looking at informal settlement development in this model, although we have looked at that in another model. So maybe I should hand over to Tony Martel to talk a little bit about the idea about the gas tap cooperatives, or I don't know, Tony, do you want to speak to this, or do you want Patrick to speak to this?
Patrick can speak.
Patrick, do you want to take us through this financial model quickly?
So the
important thing is the bottom block, where we're looking at potential revenue estimates based on the wheeling rate and the feed-in tariffs, which we were trying to estimate.
Slightly larger than the 100 kilowatts that I mentioned before, and I think it's also got updated rates. The previous estimates were done in, I think, 2020 or thereabouts. So this looks like, okay, yeah, so this means the annual revenue would be around about 420,000 rand with 135 kilowatts installation, which is, again, slightly bigger, about a third, and rates have gone up. Wherever we do these estimates, even being conservative, the amount of money, annual production that's able to be done in an area of around about 1,000 square meters is very significant. The overall township income at the moment from salaries and other sources is around about 1 billion per annum. If we do this, it's going to add another 600 million. If you did that around the country, you would change the country.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. And also just to add to that, if you look at the issue here about the rate, so obviously if you are wheeling through a third party, through a trader, the trader is going to benefit from that because they are the middleman. They want to make a profit from it. If there's a feed-in tariff where people can actually get paid in money, they would benefit at a lower rate. And if there was a subsidized tariff, which is what we would be recommending, then they would obviously benefit more from that. So a lot of the benefit from this model is determined by the rate that people are paid for what renewable energy they produce. And that is something which is at the moment very much open. And we're looking at how government and municipalities can support communities and industries in terms of feeding into the grid. Go ahead, Pat.
So a part of the idea is that industry comes on board to be the suppliers of these cooperatives, and the same with management consulting firms, whoever. We want to basically have a situation where that mercantile exchange provides services to these cooperatives so that they are rapidly professionalized in terms of how they're actually setting up these production systems. And there's a range of things that can be done. We've also done research on how to train people for this kind of activity. And so that's a different discussion. But the idea is to mobilize all the resources that are available within the city and get them deployed to build out this production network of energy, food, water collection, waste management, etc.
If I can just add to that, so one of the critical issues we're looking at here is, the president spoke beginning of last year, I think, on about the massive rollout of rooftop solar, and we've actually seen that in some respects, but not in working class or township areas. And there's a strong criticism coming from the grassroots that PV solar is only for the rich, and you can see what's happening. Government is also unhappy about it because, or Eskom is unhappy because basically people who can afford it are going off-grid and they're not contributing to the grid. So we're posing these questions, which are big questions, and we're saying, why can't working class townships, why can't all citizens contribute to solving the energy crisis by being producers of electricity instead of consumers, well, as well as consumers, to be prosumers, as Timothy says, and why can the municipal grids not benefit from the redistributive nature of PV solar production? So this is really the challenge that we are facing now, and we're looking at how this can be tested and spread out in other contexts. Tony, I don't know if you want to say something quickly about the current situation with Saltuba. Tony's been working closely with the Saltuba cooperative.
Yeah, I can say something shortly. So as has already been mentioned, you know, the Saltuba Cooperative was established in 2016. The PV array was placed on that gap tap in 2019, fed into the grid with the consent of the Municipal Electricity Department for 9 months until March 2020. Then basically it's been a process of trying to establish the legal means to set up a municipal account, and to implement the infrastructure such as a smart meter to be able to either feed in to the municipal grid or establish a wheeling arrangement with an off-taker or an end user. So as we speak, I believe on the gap tap, the Municipal Electricity Department is currently moving the kiosk, implementing a three-phase wire connection to the kiosk from the solar installation and implementing a smart meter. So earlier last year, the Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality provided a municipal account to the Saltuba Cooperative for that earth where the gap tap is, where the solar installation is. So at the current moment, the status of the cooperative is that basically that there is a need to establish a relationship with an end user, a small business to be able to receive remuneration for the electricity they're producing. So basically, the process of establishing the means to be able to set up this arrangement with an end user has been in the process since 2016. Now, basically, Saltuba has achieved that. And so it's basically almost at the stage where it can actually receive remuneration for the electricity.
Brilliant. Thank you, Tony. I think, Marika, are you going to go through some of these issues? These are some of the findings we came out with.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and also to the honourable members for an opportunity for us to present this pilot project, because I think what we needed to do is to spread the word, you know. I think based on what Tony has just said now, yes, it might come across as if we went in without necessarily following protocol or proper processes, getting their accounts and so forth. But I think members need to understand that this started as a research project. And it was actually the community that decided that they would like to pilot the community-owned renewable energy based on engagements with them, based on the research that they undertaken as part of this study as well. So therefore, yes, we did come across a lot of challenges and which I think led to findings in terms of what are the key factors, you know, to enable core development within, you know, our communities as well. And these findings are also supported by other research reports that we have come across, for instance, with IRENA, you know, Carbon Trust as well, you know, so both local and international studies that identified these five key factors. You know, we need to have enabling policy frameworks in the country for core development. We need to have clear regulatory frameworks for community ownership. There is obviously an issue of access to finance for community ownership projects. And that's a key one that always comes across in terms of how do you then fund this project, because we know that yes, our communities might not be able to raise funds for such projects. We need to look at simplified administrative processes as well. For instance, having, you know, with Tony explaining, you know, in terms of getting the municipal account and so forth, but it wasn't an easy process. And when we went in, we were not even aware of such processes, you know, that we needed to do that. Firstly, you need to make sure that there's an earth number, and if it's a state-owned land or municipal-owned land, you know, there are certain processes that they need to undertake as well to authorize the community to use that land before they can even allocate a municipal account to that. And also, importantly, capacity building and technical assistance, so skills development, and not only for community members, but also for municipalities. So if I go back to the top, you know, when it comes to enabling policy frameworks, for instance, we don't have, I think there are only a few provincial governments that have, you know, renewable energy strategies, which include, actually none of them even address, those that are there, they don't even address community ownership specifically, you know. So on a national level, yes, we've got the REAP program, which has a 30% allocation to socioeconomic development. But, you know, and you will see, I think, later on in the presentation, in terms of what we are proposing for REAP as well, you know, because, yes, it is an excellent, you know, policy framework that has enabled the country to not only obviously decarbonize and so forth, but, you know, we can still also decentralize energy generation ownership so that it does not become privatized. Our community members, our society must be able to benefit financially from the REAP program as well. So therefore, we need to introduce support programs directly for community energy investments, you know, for example, you know, having targeted grants. And then in terms of clear regulatory frameworks for community ownership, you know, these strategies must address, you know, the wheeling agreements, you know, power purchase agreements as well, you know, feed-in tariffs, because at the end of the day, you know, we need to clarify, you know, around that. We, you know, communities, they want to see real benefit from this. Yes, you can have tokens, you can have set-offs and so forth, but I think our aim is revenue generation as well, and to increase or enhance even household income and household revenue as well. So the issue of free basic electricity as well, as we know that not all, you know, those who have a right and who need free basic electricity have access to it. Interestingly enough, yes, in the Western Cape, I think due to the number of this community-owned renewable energy projects, for instance, those that are run by Zonke Energy and so forth, you know, they've managed to interact, you know, engage with municipalities like Stellenbosch Municipality, which has now, you know, I think rolling out free basic electricity tokens to subsidize even the installation of rooftop solar, you know, in informal settlements as well. And then in terms of access to finance, yes, it must be borne in mind that at the end of the day, community ownership projects, they don't only aim to maximize, you know, financial profits for its members, but it's also the issue of energy security, energy access, decarbonization as well. So as much as, yes, there might be also electricity, but, you know, the issue of affordability as well. So it's not only about access, but it's also about affordability. You know, if we look at access to finance, you know, we look at government grants as well. We need to look at how this can be funded, you know, using hybrid ownership models as well. And the study on socially owned renewable energy has addressed some of these issues, even though not to an extent, because there is still some research that needs to be done, and it needs government support and willingness, you know, political willingness to address these issues. Yes, you've got your development finance as well that is there, and you know, they have played a role. For instance, you know, with us getting the grants to do this, it is, you know, some of it through the development finance or research grants as well. You know, the issue of microcredit, I mean, there's way that we can finance this community ownership models that, if you engage with communities, as much as we can say there's no capital in the community, but, you know, you will find that there are stock fails, you know, where community members are voluntarily saving money for their needs. But you need to create an environment where, in terms of how you can use it, so that at the end of the day, the communities don't lose, but they gain as well. And then in terms of simplified administrative processes, you know, this includes for planning, project development, and critically obtaining the necessary permits as well. You know, and this can be addressed when you have your frameworks in place. Capacity building, just your municipal officials, sometimes there is still a lack of knowledge around even just energy transition. So now you bring another layer of community-owned renewables, and we saw with that with the Nelson Mandela Bay municipality, where, you know, relevant municipal officials had no idea in terms of how we can actually support this program. There was willingness, but from a bureaucratic, from a systematic perspective, it was not as easy as it can be done. And if you're dealing with community issues, you know, it can be complex. So you want to demystify that process and actually ensure that it does support community ownership as well. You know, so for instance, you know, capacitating your IDP officials, planning officials, LED officials, in addition, obviously, to electricity and infrastructure, and economic development and so forth. And we need to have, to ensure that there is availability of adequate technical expertise and assistance in implementing these various community-owned projects. I think what I like about, the biggest advantage of community, of core, the approach to it, is that it is participatory. Communities are involved in doing the research. Therefore, already there is training that takes place. You know, they become aware of what is just energy transition, you know, what is decarbonization, and all of these concepts that sometimes they can, you know, they are not necessarily, that information does not necessarily trickle down to the people who are impacted by you know, by these changes within the sector as well. So when you have a participatory approach to implementing CORE, it means that you are transferring the skills, you are capacitating your communities as well. And part of the transition township is also developing these toolkits and guidance documents that can enable local communities to set up this energy project. And we've seen, you know, other, you know, our colleagues in other universities that are now getting involved, you know, in developing this toolkit. There's one, like, for instance, with First University, including the, CALS, Center for Applied Legal Studies, and so forth, working with the community in Sekhukhune to developing these toolkits as well and guidance, and Transition Township is also part of that project. So all we are saying is, I think from a provincial perspective, we need support. You know, provinces need to support your local municipalities to ensure that they are enabling, you know, they create an enabling environment for CORE to happen. It shouldn't be a matter of, you know, if and when, you know, it's a matter of it has to be done. How do we support that? And this also boils down, and I'll come back to, boils down to what the work of the Presidential Climate Commission is actually doing and creating that and you know, starting that conversation through the study that was undertaken last year. And just to close, Prof, I don't know if maybe you want to speak to this, but yes, we had a number of stakeholders that have supported and worked with the, you know, university research team to ensure that this pilot project, you know, happens, and it also gets the recognition, you know, and it also contributing to how the country can move towards solving the energy crisis. And also the dominatable spirit of the Saltuba members and the KwaZakhele community as a whole, with all the challenges that have been there, that has taken place and so forth, that they continue to face, but they are still, you know, supporting, they are still keen, they are still committed to the project as well. Thank you. Prof, I don't know if you want to speak to this maybe quickly.
No, fine. I think you've done enough. And I just wanted to introduce that we have recently concluded a project for the Presidential Climate Commission, which broadens out the work on social ownership models and looks at not only at our transition township model, but at other ways in which social ownership of renewable energy can be used. Marijke, I'm not sure how much time we have. Maybe I can ask the chair for direction, if we can briefly fill you in on some of the findings of that.
Yeah, because it should take about 5 minutes.
No, but you can go ahead, ma'am. No worries.
All right, great. Marijke, I think go ahead and just quickly take us through the Presidential Climate Commission report.
Okay, so the presidential, how actually the university came across, obviously, I mean, we submitted a proposal when the call went out by NEDLEC, you know, for entities to undertake, you know, a literature review or scoping study on socially owned renewables. And also, obviously, this came across after engagement and us, the Transition Township, also participating during the stakeholder engagements that were held by the Presidential Climate Commission when they were preparing, you know, the just energy transition frameworks and investment plans and so forth, right? So the overarching objective of the study was obviously to identify various challenges and solutions to community-identified problems, to present case studies on financing modalities, institutional and other barriers, you know, for the study to propose method and structure for selecting pilot projects together with criteria for selection, research questions, finance options, monitoring and evaluations, and so forth. And also it was hoped that with the study, we could propose municipal guidelines on new models of generation, institutional planning, and green and grid strengthening as well. And also to propose options for structure and function of a community of practice in community or social ownership. And finally, to develop requirements for capacity development support and further community engagement. So these objectives spoke to exactly what we had started doing, you know, from around 2016 to date. So some of the key findings that came out of the study, you know, that developed based on obviously international case studies and local case studies, identified four models of socially owned renewables. And the first model, it looked at the mini grid, owned, co-owned by and managed by residents. And this was mostly for access and not necessarily for revenue. So for access and obviously affordable, and not only just access, but affordable access. And this mini grid model is focused more on rural or informal settlements with no access to grid. And therefore, the main purpose is to provide free basic electricity to households. And there are a number of case studies locally that already have implemented or are implementing the mini grid options, yes, with challenges and difficulties as well. So, you know, that's one model that's there. And then the second model, it was the township transition model, which is the tenant or township co-op, which is made up of or cooperatively owned by solar generation. Own PV solar generation, which can be rooftop, where you know, on household or an array, a solar array on public land, which then becomes an independent power producer, or a community building, for instance, you know, your schools, church, and so forth. And so it's grid tied. That is the key one here, the fact that it is tied to the grid because you're feeding into that grid. And, you know, it's wheeled. So it's fed into through the municipality or wheeled through the municipal grid. In some instances, it might be the Eskom grid, actually, depending on where this is based. So obviously you need smart metering, which can integrate household with array or community building, and can also integrate households or be owned by households. So I think things like your massive rollout of rooftop solar would work into this. So the issue here, and especially with the smart metering as well, because this tenant or township-based co-op model, the main concept was to feed into the municipal grid for revenue enhancement. But yes, households then will say, but we have this installation, we have this facility, this energy facility, but we still do not have access to electricity. We still experience load shedding and so forth. And I mean, that's a simple, that's a given, you know, I think it's the right questions for communities to ask. So then how do we ensure that, you know, we have infrastructure that will ensure that households will still have access to their free basic electricity? They can still perhaps maybe even purchase, you know, this electricity from their own co-op as well. And then the third model that we looked at was the community land independent power producer. This is a large-scale generation by private capital on community-owned land, selling to Eskom as part of REIPPP, or selling to private, meaning, you know, your industrial or mining off-takers. And there is share ownership of a minimum of 10%, or there could be, or even rental income. So communities can sell, they can you know, part own the IPP as part of the REIPPP program. As mentioned earlier, that we need to review the REIPPP program or even open it up so that it addresses community ownership in addition, or look even at the 30% of socioeconomic development that is part of REIPPP to ensure that it is meaningful, that community participation in that is meaningful. And then the fourth model, the worker-owned IPP, where workers have share or direct ownership of embedded generation on a factory, mine, or repurposed power station or institutional rooftops by workers. And this normally we see with mining companies now, you know, establishing their own energy generations divisions. And we are saying that, you know, the workers, they need to be part, you know, they need to have share ownership in that IPP, which at the end, it not only is it aimed to address their own energy needs as a company, but also to sell to government or to Eskom as well. And then some of the recommendations that we found, obviously there were a number of issues. You know, you're looking at technical issues, you're looking at funding issues, you're looking at capacity issues as well. But the main thing that came out from the funding, you know, how do we ensure that this project becomes viable? We need to look at unlocking funding sources, seeking financial support from National Treasury and municipalities and other development finance institutions as well. So there were concerns, for instance, in some of the models about accountability in relation to loan agreements, you know, as exemplified by the instance of the Komati plant in Mpumalanga as well. There was a proposition regarding increased corporate social investments in socially owned renewable projects that should include specific requirements and responsibilities towards the communities they aim to benefit. And then Model 4 specifically, you know, there is potential for trade union investment arms. If you remember, that's a worker-owned model, you know, so there is potential for trade union investment arms and pension funds to be used for REIPPP public-private partnerships model. Model 3, potential for land assets to be leveraged. So we require further investigation and consultation on that. And then also the lack of transparency in loan from international finance institutions was highlighted by stakeholders as well. This lack of public oversight raised concerns about the country's obligation without adequate representations. I'll stop because I wanted to mention that this was especially raised by civil society when it comes to the transparency of loans from international finance institutions, where you indebt, you know, communities or society without any engagement oversight. Or proper oversight with regards to that. And then identified all the significant obstacles to achieve meaningful just transition. So there are inadequacies in funding allocations for social ownership within the framework of the Just Energy Transition Implementation Plan. So obviously the JET-IP is just one of the funding instruments that can support social ownership, but it is inadequate. It's not going to be enough. And also the implementation of socially owned renewables, it needs to be supported properly by proper regulatory mechanisms as well. And then collectively, perspectives on finance underscore the complexity of securing funding for socially owned renewables energy initiatives, highlighting the need for careful consideration of funding sources, mechanisms, and transparency to ensure effective and equitable implementation. And these findings, they all come from the stakeholder engagement that we undertook as part of the study. And then in terms of national and municipal regulations, the discussions with stakeholders underscore the intricate web of regulations, policies, and challenges that must be navigated to enable effective social ownership of renewable energy projects. Consensus emerged that tailored and progressive regulations are essential to ensuring equitable and sustainable outcomes. And there is a need for holistic community-centered approaches emphasizing education, collaboration, and flexibility to ensure the success of socially owned renewables and to foster a just and sustainable transition to cleaner energy sources was, you know, that was also highlighted. And there is an urgent need to ensure significant work to speed and scale up renewable energy generation in South Africa and ensuring that we are not leaving anyone behind in this just energy transition process. Additionally, in terms of regulations, adjust national legislation to better align with social renewables. And you know, the question is, how do we do all of this? You know, so this is where I think you know, engagements with communities need to come in. Engagement with expertise, engagement with government, relevant government entities need to come on board and have these discussions in terms of how do we align that. The Electricity Regulation Act and NERSA to be revamped for compatibility with social renewable models so that it doesn't become a peripheral issue, you know, but it becomes part of the national legislation as well. The revenue model of municipalities should introduce innovative incentives, and obviously municipalities are worried about losing revenue if we are bringing in community-owned renewables as well. So how do we work with municipalities to ensure that you know, we assist them instead of, you know, creating a competition or eating into their revenue. Yes, we need to relook those legacy revenue models to ensure that core becomes part of municipal systems as well. The Municipal Systems Act and distribution licenses pose challenges for implementation in villages and rural areas. Empowerment and consultation to ensure inclusivity and knowledge parity among stakeholders, and the possibility of redirecting the free basic electricity subsidy towards supporting socially owned renewables. It is just a recommendation or some of the recommendations that have come across. I think that's it. Thank you so much. And I'll hand over to Prof. Sherry.
Hi, yeah, thanks very much. Thank you, Marika. Quite a lot in terms of the recommendations which came out of the report we did on models of social ownership of renewable energy. But I thought maybe we could take questions and discussion with you about how this potential for social ownership of renewables could apply in your context, and if you have any questions. And a lot of these things are quite complex, and we've had extensive debate with different parties in government and elsewhere about how implementable they are and so on. But I'd really enjoy some interaction with you on this.
Thank you very much, Professor Cherry, and to your team for that
very interesting presentation. Before I open for the floor for questions, can I ask that you send this presentation to this specific presentation to our procedural officer, Ms. Kruti, because I see it is different to the one that you sent previously. So if you can send that to us, please, I'd really appreciate it. Members, I'm going to open the floor for questions right now. As is per our norm, we will have 3 questions per member per round. And then we'll get questions for a second out. I see Member Kasim.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, Member Kasim, go ahead.
No problem. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to Professor as well for the presentation. I've got 3 questions based on the articles on the presentation. The first question, I see that an article, or rather on slide 6, it says the food garden participants made 900 rand a year. Was this the amount made collectively by the participants or what? Or also how many participants were part of this project? Because 900 rand per year or per annum looks very little. It's either 900 rand per annum or it's an error, type of error in that article. So if you can please get clarity on that. And then secondly, on the same article, how much are these participants getting or expecting to get from the municipality for selling renewable energy to them? In providing the answer, please leave the future income projections for now, but I would really like you to focus on how much are they getting now. And then lastly, on slide 8, which also has the articles, you came to the conclusion that KwaZulu-Natal as a whole could generate 600 million per annum based on township-owned productions. Please give a breakdown of how you came to that figure and how much each household is going to earn. That's my questions for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member Kasim. Member Kondlo, I humbly apologize. Before I open the floor for questions, I should have recognized you and asked you to introduce yourself so that Professor Cherry and this team know that. But Member Kondlo?
So thank you very much, Chairperson and colleagues, and good morning to Professor and her team, and thank you for the presentation. I think I'll follow on Member Kasim's questions. One, I just want to understand from Prof and the team, in this context, how would you define a community? And I'm raising this because I think the community ownership and the policy that I think government has followed, went through, it's very noble. And we've seen, I think, on the ground that there are serious challenges and dynamics in communities, you know, about empowerment models that have been trialed, I think, previously, you know, to try, and I mean, you think of the CPA in the agri space, you know, and others, and I think you are correct, RAPE is one positive policy framework, but I think also it has been challenged in terms of looking at what exactly have been the results. So I'm interested in this context that what if for this project would you define as a community? The second one, in terms of that response, community ownership, what is the governance structure and model for this purpose of a community ownership structure? You already have one of KwaZulu-Natal, and I'm interested to understand what would be the ownership structure of the households who would be participating, if any, you know, in that. So that's why I'm interested to understand what is the governance structure of a community ownership scheme. My third question would be, at this point, have you been able to sort of give us what is the cost per unit of electricity generated from this particular scheme? And I'm raising this in context, you know, if one has to do a cost-benefit analysis in context to the current ESCOM cost cost per unit? Because for me, I think these are some of the questions that even the province that has been, you know, having its own renewable energy strategies and programs. It's a question that is continuously asked so that one gets to understand what cost are we talking about and what is the cost effectiveness, if any, you know, from moving from the current electricity to, any renewables. And lastly, how would this particular project deal with the, I think government in the initial stages started to put the solar, I think rooftops. I know when I always raise this in the Western Cape, majority, I think there's a community here in Atlantis called Veterans. I mean, you have that particularly in the RDP houses, which now those things are standing there as very bad ornaments, actually, because when you go into those households, those solar rooftops are not working, you know, taking just the space, you know. So it's one of the things that, because it was trialed, and I think there's not been good follow-ups of that, you may find, and I'm saying in some communities, not all, that attraction or people having trust or confidence, you know, in using solar is something based on those kind of experiences. That what would have been your experience as a project, and how would you deal with such an issue? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Member Nkondlo. Professor Cherry, if you may answer those questions, please.
Yes, thank you very much. So I'm going to ask Patrick to respond to the questions about the food gardens and the sale of electricity now, and the breakdown of the 600 million per annum for the gas tap and so on. But let me just address quickly member Nkondlo, the question of the definition of community, because it is part of our report. So what we said is that a community is a subset of social, and it can refer to any group of people with a common interest or living in a common locality or neighborhood. But we are not looking at elite communities in this struggle, in this context. We are saying in this study, community is defined both geographically and socioeconomically to refer to residents of a particular village, neighborhood, or township. So it is defined as geographical and organized groups amongst socially and economically disadvantaged people. So we also noted, and this is quite important, that sharing a common location, i.e. living in the same place, does not mean that everybody has a common interest. And there are often conflicts of interest within a village or a township or a neighborhood. So social ownership presupposes some level of social relationship and organization. That's quite important. The other thing that I wanted to respond to from Member Nkondlo is the question about the sense and the program of putting solar on rooftops. So my understanding, and I don't know the with the sense how they have implemented this, but in Nelson Mandela Bay, there was an extensive program for RDP houses to be fitted with PV solar hot water heaters specifically. And I don't know if that is what the member is referring to in Cape Town, but the hot water heaters was a very good and innovative program when it was implemented, which was I think nearly two decades ago now. And it was innovative because it was actually a way of reducing electricity costs for households and subsidizing hot water heaters. But there are problems with it. So there are problems with maintenance and with how those hot water heaters are installed. And there can be problems over time with them not working. So it depends on, yeah, if they were community owned, it would depend on people being trained to maintain them themselves. So the problem is, I think, because they were subsidized as part of a program, then they are, you know, the people who get them for free say, well, this is just something government is giving us and it doesn't work. It doesn't give us exactly what we need, or it's not maintained. Municipality doesn't go around fixing the leaks in the solar, in the roofs when the solar heaters are not installed properly. I think if PV solar is installed, not just for water heaters, but for other purposes, I've got to say, technically, it is possible for PV solar to meet most of the needs of a household. But what we are testing and what I think is important in this model is that people's needs are met adequately. So it's no good saying we're giving you free electricity, but it's not enough for you to cook with. And then people say, but hang on, I want to have this kind of a stove or this kind of washing machine, but the PV solar doesn't support it. So it's quite important to get that right, i.e. that you don't have expectations that people are going to have something beneficial, but it actually doesn't meet the needs that they require. In terms of the government structure of community ownership, there is no such thing at the moment. So part of what we're doing in this pilot project is looking at how that can be structured. Our model currently is one which involves, okay, so there are two which are existing models. The one is households of municipal townships where people are connected to a municipal grid, and each household, you know, pays at the moment, they pay for their own electricity using pay as you go. But the idea would be that they would be organized into a cooperative where they actually own the PV solar energy production. The other one is what Mareka referred to as REIP, the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program. And in that one, the community is often the residents of a village, or in fact, there are only a couple that we know of which have been implemented on communal land. But most of them are implemented on farms where there is a community who are within 50 kilometres, who are defined as the beneficiary community and who get the community development trust benefit from that renewable energy project. Let me ask, Pat, if you can just respond to the question about the cost of energy generated per unit, yeah, and the breakdown of what the households would receive.
Yeah, so I don't have the figures exactly in front of me, but we did a pilot study on one of the gas taps in Kwazulu. There are 120 altogether, each of them around about 1,000 square meters. And we didn't cover the entire 1,000 square meters. We just built a 5-kilowatt installation. But we can extrapolate from the results of that production. And we fed into the grid we fed into the grid for at least a year and a half. And we used the results of that to project what you can see in front of you. So we did these estimates originally, and then we confirmed them with the production that we achieved in that year and a half period. So if you look at the bottom there, there's 25 households with 0.1 megawatts, which is 100 kilowatts. That would be the entire gap there. And so that's going to produce around about 150,000 kilowatt hours per annum, which at the price it was back in 2019, we did this calculation, that's 285,000 per annum. So the prices have gone up since then. So that's the value of what you would buy it for on the municipal grid. Now, obviously, how that gets broken down to the household, that would be a next step, because we haven't worked out exactly how the wheeling would work. Each place you do this is going to be different slightly, but we can say something about the payback period that because we know what 100 kilowatts would cost. It's around about $1 million. And so if we're generating 285,000 rand a year, the payback's going to be around about 5 to 7 years. So it lasts for 25 years. So the net present value of the rest of that production goes to the household, or a portion of it goes to the household. Now, we estimate that portion will be around about 500 rand a month, which in the context of each household having an average revenue of about 3,000, that's significant. And that's a conservative estimate. And if you add the other production activities that can happen there, and this is where the 600 million comes in, you know, vegetable production, again, we tested per square meter what we could produce. We have a few, we haven't talked about in this presentation, but we've got a couple of greenhouses up on the site. And so they've tested how much spinach can you produce per square meter. I haven't had the number in the article sounds like it could be a mistake, or it was, you know, for one of the things that they produced and they tested per square meter over a period of time. But the overall productive capacity of 1,000 square meters is around about another 250,000 to 300,000. And we can add waste as well, it's a smaller number, but 1,000 square meters has potential to produce around about, 600,000 or 500,000 rands worth of produce. Energy and fresh vegetables. So when you extrapolate that to the township level, it's 100, there's 25,000 households, it gets significant. So that's the source of the 600 million.
Thanks, Ben.
Again, these are pilot studies, so they need to be rolled out, but we're just showing potential.
Can I just say also, just the question was from Member Kasim, what actually have the members received from the sale of electricity? And the answer is they have received nothing from the sale of electricity to date. So although Saltuba has been feeding into the municipal grid, they haven't been able to be paid anything for that. Vegetable production, it's very small scale. It doesn't generate a lot of income, but people can also use the vegetables. It increases nutrition for households, etc. as well. Thanks.
So just to add, the installation produced around about, in the time that it was running, the first experiment we did, around about 25,000 rand over a period of, I think, a year and a half. So at that current price, the municipal price. That's a 5 kilowatt installation. In other words, that's potentially what could go to each, a portion of that could go to each household.
Thank you very much for those answers. Members, I'm going to open up for the second round of questions if necessary. Are there any further questions or follow-up questions from Member Kasim and Member Nkondlo? If not, then... Members Dagmore and Nkondlo. Member Dagmore?
Thank you very much, Chair. And also thank you to Prof. Cherry and her team for the presentation. I just wanted to get a sense as to, I mean, there are a number of recommendations made at the end of the presentation, and I just wanted to get a sense as to, you know, how the lobbying process is going around those particular recommendations and whether there are any anticipated timeframes to secure, you know, the implementation of those recommendations. And then lastly, whether there, I know the work that's being done, it is being done in Gqeberha, whether there are any plans with the project to, you know, take it to other either towns or cities in the Eastern Cape. That's what I'd like to know. Thanks.
Thank you, Member Dagmar Membenkondlo.
No, thank you, Chair. Thank you for the responses. And perhaps, Chair, as you requested, the sharing of the presentation will help us to read, and maybe even if there is other reports of the pilot, if ready, which we could read ourselves in just getting more clarity, you know, about some of the technical issues, especially, I think, the funding model. I think for me that would be also something that I would be interested to hear. But safe to say, I just also wanted to say, I think for me this is a very good project, particularly in trying to give meaning to this concept of just transition, because I think one has always been asking what is just in just transition, you know, because in the framework is also one could read what is written there. It really tried to pull the developmental approach to, you know, this issue of renewables, so that we are not getting into another trajectory of a highly elitist and exclusionary, you know, sort of a process of energy, of energy, that would see once again into the future more being outside, more as consumers than indeed participating. So I think one is very must applaud, I think, this type of interventions that seeks to disrupt, you know, your old traditional ways of bringing people into this kind of, the economics now of energy, so that it is not just looked at as a social issue, that there is an energy crisis in South Africa, people do not have electricity, and. But we are not looking at the economics thereof, that when such energy now must be rebuilt, you know, using alternatives, where are these people who are in the main having to consume this electricity and are not participating? So I'm very happy from where I'm sitting. I think because this is one model, I believe, you know, helps indeed to try and start answering what is just in just transition. Obviously, with the issues that have been raised by the colleagues, that there is a number of issues that needs to be cleaned out or that still needs to be responded to, particularly because sometimes we've got a variety of policy positions or policies that are different. If you look at the rape one on one hand, you know, just transition, you look at the community ownership itself. So how do you bring all of these, you know, in a manner where they are coherent to actually give impetus to this kind of problems, and also you reduce a level of red taping, you know, in getting the project to actually be kick-started. So I wanted to sort of just give that. But the one question, Chair, that I would like to get some clarity on is that this particular model, has it been able to sort of benefit into what government, national government, has introduced as incentives to encourage businesses and households to install rooftop solar panels? I mean, we heard that from the 1st of March, you know, such can actually claim a tax rebate. So in this financing model, I'm asking, are we also looking at tapping into that tax rebate as part of building the necessary financial resources that would be needed to put up and to actually sustain, you know, this particular initiative of community ownership schemes? Thanks.
Thank you, Member Nkondlo. Member van der Westhuizen?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and also from my side, thank you very much for these presentations. And I want to link on to what the Honourable Dagmar has asked in terms of lobbying. I appreciate the fact that, you know, you want to change the narrative and you want to influence people, which may be able to influence others. But it did strike me that a number of the challenges identified and the proposals made speak to other spheres of government. Our ability as a provincial government to influence, you know, NERSA, or, you know, to reorganize NERSA, etc., is obviously extremely limited and only informal, because they do not report to us, we don't approve their budget, etc. So I'm interested to know, you know, how much lobbying have you been able to do at particularly national level and then also in terms of local government? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Member van der Westhuizen. And Professor Cherry?
Yeah, thank you. To Member Dougmore, the issue of what happens to the recommendations. So the PCC report is going to be launched in about a month from now, in the second week of March. And I think it will be done at a public online event. And the PCC will then use that as a basis for stakeholder engagement around this. It doesn't have a formal process of going through national government. Basically, the PCC, as you know, is basically mandated to try and get a common position or consensus among different stakeholders from business, government, civil society around the just transition. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I think it's what we're going to try and do from our side is to work with specific municipalities and provincial governments. And Marijke can maybe speak to the issue of provincial governments, because we've got a MOU with the Limpopo government and we've had some engagement with the Eastern Cape provincial government. So what we want to do is to, there was a question about whether we're going to implement such pilots in other towns or provinces. And we're going to, I've got funding, again, this is research funding through the NRF, National Research Foundation, to expand or replicate these pilots in the Eastern Cape and Limpopo. And in the Torbian specific municipalities that are selected to implement them. So, yeah, hopefully that will happen in the next year or two. So we'll see what the outcome is there. And then on the question of Member Nkondlo's question about where does this go?
Tax rebates.
Okay, so the issue about the tax rebate on putting solar panels up. So what we've, you know, the interesting thing is that this doesn't apply to the township households that we have implemented this pilot in. And it definitely does apply when we're looking at businesses or middle-class households. So we've looked at examples of private households who have implemented PV solar and how it has benefited them and where the tax rebates apply. But I don't think that it applies to the KwaZakhele model at the moment. And that's what we are posing this question, like what is the form of subsidy or benefit that can accrue to working class households where people do own the house, but they are usually receiving free basic services in terms of their household income, which is below the minimum level for receiving subsidies. And why can't there be incentives for people in the lower income brackets to participate in PV solar generation? Because those incentives actually apply only to a very limited number of people. Which is not a bad, I mean, they're not a bad thing. Those incentives are good, but they don't apply to everybody. We were also looking at the, in terms of support for this, to the JETP, which is the global financing for the Just Transition, the Just Energy Transition Partner, International Partnership, and how some of that could be allocated for social ownership of renewable energy, because the focus of that is on two things, on decommissioning of coal-fired power stations and also on transition of the motor industry to electric vehicles. Again, important input. I think also quite a significant input into green hydrogen, the development of that industry. These are all very important, but there should also be some contribution in terms of PV solar and how that can be massified, in terms of huge scale implementation. So, I think what we're really saying is that this just energy transition, PV solar is not just something for small scale informal settlements where people need a light to study by, or on the other side, wealthy households who can afford to go off-grid. But there's something in between which we haven't really explored at all. In terms of lobbying and where this is taken up by other people, Member Van der Westhuizen, NERSA, yeah, we have been engaging with NERSA. We've been engaging with SALGA. SALGA has quite an interesting program for supporting local government in terms of renewable energy. And we think that they have potential to do a lot more in that regard as well. Is there something I haven't responded to?
By my count, I don't see anything that you haven't responded to, ma'am.
Yeah, you've covered everything, Prof.
Thanks.
And then maybe just to add on the provincial side, and especially taking from what Mr. Van der Westhuizen said about obviously lobbying, changing the narrative and so forth. Yes, we do have, we engage with provincial governments because you are another sphere, provincial governments are a coordinating sphere of government, and you provide support to local government, right? And therefore, you should not be left out of, the engagements and the changes that are actually taking place from the local government, because we feel that provinces or provincial governments, they have a critical role to play. I mean, for instance, Prof mentioned that yes, we have entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Limpopo provincial government, where they are interested in ensuring that their municipalities or relevant municipal officials are trained on the concept of just energy transition, okay, and obviously introducing also the element of community-owned renewables as part of that training. Now, what is great is that we could have tried to engage with individual municipalities, for instance, and gotten nowhere, with that process, but having to establish that relationship with the provincial government and then saying, listen, we need this and we would like to support, we need to ensure that our municipalities can be capacitated on these changes that are taking place in the energy sector, which obviously, it's changes that take place quite, very critically, it's 1 month you are sitting with this, the next month it's a completely different legislative or an act that is being introduced. So they need to be able to keep up with the trends and the changes within the energy sector as well. So, I don't think that provincial government is powerless, but there are ways that you can influence as a coordinating sphere of government. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your answers. I'm assuming that's a legacy hand?
Yes, Chair, my apologies.
No problem. Members, as Member Nkondlo said earlier, as alluded to by me as well, that we will get the presentation from Professor Chetty through via our procedural officer. And if there are any further questions, may I ask that you submit them to Ms. Klute by next week, Monday, which is the 12th of February at around 3:30 or close of business, so that we can get answers in writing from Professor Chetty and her team. If there are no further questions, I would like to say thank you very much to Professor Chetty and your team from the Nelson Mandela University on this interesting presentation. You may be excused as we have to do committee business. But thank you very much and all the best with your future endeavors and for your work in this area. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
See you soon.
Thank you very much. Members, we will now move on to resolutions and actions. Are there any resolutions that you'd like to bring up, members, on the presentation? Okay. Member Dagmore?
Jenna, I just wanted to ask, towards the end, I was showing appreciation with a heart sign.
Okay.
That comes up. I just wanted to know whether our colleague doing the translation was able to capture the heart that I sent up. Was it captured or was it not captured by the translator?
Are you talking about the sign language interpreter?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm talking about the sign language coordinator, whether she managed to capture the heart.
Okay. Ms. Amira, were you able to capture the heart? No. No, but what we will do, Member Dagmore, is I will convey my thanks on behalf of the committee through a letter to Professor Chetty, and I will ask her for the details of that launch of the report on the PCC, the report to the PCC, as I understand it. Then we can also join online if necessary and if time allows, if that's okay.
No, thanks, Chair. No, my only proposal is that the committee conducts an oversight visit to the launch. Let me go to Tebeke.
I'll have to investigate that, but I will definitely take that down as a recommendation. Members, are there any further resolutions or actions?
Chair, my apologies. I won't repeat mine because I think it's already a resolution supporting what you suggested of some of the reports, because one is just interested to learn more about what the project is about in detail. There wasn't sufficient time, and perhaps we can refer. I'm not sure whether already our Economic Development Department, we cannot refer them to also look at this, given our municipal energy resilience project, if maybe they could also look at whether something of this nature could ever be done in the Western Cape context. Perhaps it's a conversation that they could have, given that the DDEX is also working with the municipalities around the Municipal Energy Resilience Project. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Member Nkondlo. Ms. Klute, we can definitely do that. Is that correct? We can refer the presentation and the detail to the Department of Economic Development.
Good morning, Chairperson. Yes, we cannot refer, but we may draft a letter to the department with a presentation, and you as the chairperson and committee may alert the department to this.
We will definitely do so, Member Nkondlo. Thank you very much. Members, are there any further resolutions?
I'll take that as a no. Then what we will do further announcements is that Ms. Kruti will send out a notice for the next ad hoc committee meeting. We will also find out about that launch, when it will happen, and distribute that information to the committee. Members, if there is no further matters to be discussed, thank you very much for your attendance. I know that some of us are on oversight visits and some of us are feverishly working in our various constituencies. So thank you very much for your attendance here, and all the best for the coming days. And this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.